Welcome everybody to the workshop on how to open a face-to-face meeting. My name is Suzanne and I'm leading this workshop and we have three wonderful speakers. Also, I hope we address a little bit about if you have an existing meeting that's kind of falling apart, maybe some of our leaders, people that are sharing will have some great suggestions on that as well. This workshop came about because, as many of you know, a lot of meetings are closing and some people are going to the phone bridge. And face-to-face meetings are really, really, they are important because that's where we get our hugs. That's where we get to be seen. That's where I get to be seen by my sponsor. I can't isolate there, you know, on the phone bridge. I get to be seen by my sponsor and I get hugs. I get support and love. Both are wonderful, and I need both. So our first speaker is going to be Adele. Adele, I know from PhoneBridge, and I also know she has opened a meeting or two. And she's going to share her experience, strength, and hope on how to open a face-to-face meeting, what she gets from it, because we do get rewards from it, and how the process went for her. Thank you, Adele.
Thanks, Suzanne. Hi, I'm Adele, compulsive eater bulimic. I didn't know that I was going to be on this panel until about a week ago, maybe less, but it's all good. I moved to a town that didn't have any meetings. They had meetings before, but they didn't, you know, they had closed. So I talked to one girl that knew the person that shared the meeting before, and I called her, but she wasn't interested in this program anymore. I would mention it to a couple of my other 12-step friends about, you know, I'm going to start this meeting, and I'm a procrastinator. So what happened was one girl said, I thought you said you was going to start a meeting. So, you know, the first thing is, you know, you need to look for a place. And I couldn't find a place. And what happened was where the city where I came from, and it's like a little small city, San Dimas, Laverne, and, you know, one girl had a meeting in her house. So I started a meeting at my house. And made sure, you know, you need to pick a date that is good for you, because if nobody else have abstinence, you need to, I think in the package that World Service send you, I think they say you need to be committed for at least a year, because, you know, sometimes people come in, they get 6 months, and they might go back out, so you need to be committed for at least, you know, a year to somebody get abstinence, because the town that I moved to, nobody had abstinence. I mean, I was the secretary, treasurer, literature person, I was everything. And what I did, I made sure that, you know, I didn't have no smells in my house the day of the meeting. I didn't cook before they come. So I had talked to World Service and registered a meeting. So it's always good to have the meeting registered before you start it. And World Service sent me some, you know, all the stuff for the secretary. They tell you what the secretary need to do, the treasurer, the inner group. They give you, you know, everything. They give you everything that you need. And they also sent me some pamphlets. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it have all the questions in it that you ask to see if you're a compulsive overeater. And I took that pamphlet, and I went through the questions, and I put some of those questions in the article for the newspaper. You know, I called the newspaper, and I asked them what, you know, can we put this in the newspaper? And they told me what section, and I took some of those questions, you know, like the question about oh, you're always thinking about food, you know. So I put some of those questions in, and when I put it in the newspaper, I stayed anonymous because I just put my phone number and not my name. And so we did the meeting at my house from about February to July. And we, you know, I had the first meeting, one of the girls from my old meeting came up to support me. So it was two of us that had abstinence. And it's kind of hard to do a meeting every week, and you don't want to be do the 15-minute spill every time. So what I did was I called people from the phone bridge, like Ella, the one that was in the fashion show last night, and other people from the phone bridge, and I had them to share their story. I put my little cell phone in the middle of the dining room table, and, you know, she shared her story, and then we would it was a big book study, and we did, you know, after she shared her story, we would hang up and read. And then, you know, naturally, I was the only person able to share, which, you know, kind of hard because, you know. And so, and I did have another friend. She drove 2 hours out to work to come up to lead a meeting. And then another girl came from L.A. She drove over an hour to come up to lead a meeting. And we also did CDs, but only thing about that, you know, of the conventions, the speakers of the convention, you had to break it up because, you know, the meeting is only an hour meeting. So, you know, the speaker, by the time you do the reading and hear part of the speaker. So we did all that. And then one time we had 9 people at the meeting. It was really, you know, very impressive. And it took, I think, started the meeting in February. So it took about 6 months for somebody to get some abstinence. And by the time we moved, it was a person came to the meeting that didn't live in the town, but they worked in the town. And they said, you know, I worked at this hospital, and let me ask them there. Because, you know, at every meeting I tell people, you know, you guys listen, you know, help me find a place. Because what did happen, a lot of people called me from the newspaper article, but they never showed up. And then I was talking to somebody on the phone bridge, and they said, well, once I took it out of my house, people showed up. I did have one girl show up, and she brought a friend, but she didn't like the part of giving up some of the stuff that she, you know, she wanted to have in her food plan. And so what happened was once I took it out of the house, this guy came, and he said, well, let me talk to the person at this hospital. And they let us have the educational room for free, but my sponsor said we need to be self-supporting, so we made a contribution. And we was there for about a year and something, and they moved that office. But we did have people that come from the newspaper. So it was kind of weird that, you know, people came from the newspaper. So we stayed there for a while, and then we had to move again because they moved us closer to the hospital, and they could only let us have the room 3 nights a month. So we needed it 4 nights a month, so we moved to a church that another girl from the program, she was going to this church, and it's weird. I had called this church, and they said, let me call you back, and they never called back. But when she was a member, and she asked, and they was giving it to us for whatever we could afford. And I had talked to one church, and they was talking about $100 a day. It's like, my God, this is a self-support. So that wasn't going to work out. So the main thing is just be committed. Be committed to be the secretary. But the secretary need to have, you know, 30 days of abstinence because nobody can leave the meeting if you don't have 30 days of abstinence. So what we did at the end was, because it's only so many times you want to share your story when you don't have that much abstinence. So what happened was, since it was a Tuesday night meeting and it was at 6 o'clock, it was the same time as the phone bridge meeting, and the phone bridge had a speaker. So what we would do the reading, and then we would tap into the phone bridge for that speaker, and then after the speaker shared and gave her phone number, we would hang up, and then we would do our own reading. And that's what they still do to this day. I moved from the town about 3 weeks ago, and so they, you know, still tap into the phone bridge for the speaker, and then they hang up and do their reading. And so it have made my life so much better. I had been of service before on the phone bridge as an intergroup rep, but doing the face-to-face meeting, it keep me abstinence. And another girl that I sponsored, she started 2 more meetings, but she had to close 1. So right now the town have 2 meetings that had no meetings, 2 face-to-face meetings, 1 on Tuesday and 1 on Saturday. So you have to, and one good thing about the 2 meetings is 1 is a nighttime meeting, which make it good for people that work and don't have Saturday off, and then the other one is a Saturday meeting for people that in the daytime. So, but you have to pick a meeting that you are committed to, and the only day that I could commit was a Tuesday. And so, because somebody said, well, why don't you start another meeting? It's like, I can't commit to another meeting. I do too much running around, and, I want to, if I start something, I want to, be able to follow through. And, but it made my life much better. Somebody told me, you're very enthusiastic. And, good thing about the secretary, you got to be willing to speak up. If somebody mentioned food, you got to be willing, because we had to put in our reading, you can't mention food at a meeting because it was getting, kind of sidetracked, and, we had to do what's good for the whole and not what's good for one person. And so the secretary needs to be able to speak up, with a nice, loving, gentle voice, we don't mention food. And And, you know, you have to, some of the people wanted to change the words in the big book. You know, you need to speak up and, you know, not change, you know, alcohol to food. And you just got to be willing to be loving and kind, and but still keep the program. We the keeper of this program. Because I noticed one time I was at a meeting, and I wasn't a secretary, and it was a meeting that this Tuesday night meeting. One person mentioned food, the secretary didn't say anything, and then the next person that shared mentioned food, and it's like, and so it's just, you know, and I feel like that, you know, it got to be what's good for the whole. You can't be scared to speak up, and that's what this program do. It give you a voice to, you know, be able to, you know, just say, you know, you know, we don't mention food here. And so, because I have been to other swaps without meaning, and they mention food. By the time I leave that meeting, I'm kind of like trying to run for some food. So I think I covered everything. And, you know, you have any questions, it's in the book. And if you can't find it in the book, you know, I have called World Service going, da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, they call me back. I leave them a message, and they call me back. They, you know, very, very helpful to... for people, you know, even since I've been not the secretary of meeting, I call them with questions, just, you know, sponsees questions. So I think that's pretty much it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. And like I said, at the end, we'll have a period of time for questions and answers. Our next speaker is Margie, and Margie has a lot of experience, and let's hear her story.
Thank you, Suzanne. I'm Margie, a compulsive eater. Thanks so much for inviting me to be on the panel. When I came to the program, it was January 26, 1992. And of course, that was before we had C-Help, but it was a program where we did what we do here. And it was in Sacramento, California. And someone I knew from another program I was in had told me about this program, and I had seen the light in her eyes, and I had seen how happy she looked, and she was transformed even before she stopped really releasing too much weight. And seeing that in her, at first I thought, oh, I can't do everything she's telling me she's doing, but it was only a matter of weeks, one more humiliating holiday season. And then I knew I had to call her. You know, I'd been begging God for help every night after another night of binging on the couch in front of the TV. And I called her, and she told me she would meet me at a meeting. And I was living in Sacramento, California. That's where I had grown up. And I showed up at this meeting. And as the meeting room filled up, there were probably about 40 people in this, crowded into this beauty parlor. And it was so, the energy in the room was just contagious. People were so excited and happy. People were standing up and they were wearing these sparkly tops and saying they'd released over 100 pounds. I couldn't hardly believe it. The power and the energy in that swept me up so much. And in that room that night, I saw 7 people I knew from the community outside of that room. And I absolutely knew I belonged in C-HAL. The power of that energy in that group. And at that time in Sacramento, there were a lot of meetings. And a new person, I had the schedule, and I was gleefully skipping around town, going to all these meetings, you know. And I was very surrendered, so I was very willing, and I was very excited. Within my first 3 days of abstinence, I felt like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And I just wanted to keep doing what they said to do, because I wanted to keep feeling the way I was feeling. My life had really gone downhill before I got to the program. Within 10 days, I had been in a car accident that had me flat on my back. I had been fired from a job, and my fiancé had broken off our engagement. And that's when I spiraled down into the food. And so when I made it to this program, I was in a little dumpy apartment that was half of a garage. And it was me and the food and the couch, you know, and the TV and the refrigerator. That was my world. And what happened when I got abstinent in this program, my world popped open again. And opportunities started showing up for me. You know, I'd been sending out resumes before that, and I couldn't follow up with a phone call to see if they even had it because I felt so bad about myself. But all of a sudden, I could show up and shake people's hand. You know, and I was just living life on a different basis. And one day I picked up the newspaper because I was looking to, you know, to find that next job. And there was a job in another city. Well, I was never going to leave Sacramento. This was where my recovery was. This is where my new life was happening. And I was so angry when I saw this ad for this job because I absolutely knew if I applied for it, I was going to get that job. And I applied for it, and they offered me a job. And I was calling, you know, my sponsor in this other program saying, I can't go there. They won't have my food program there. And she says, well, how do you know that? And so she said, just call someone. And so I called someone in that community, and I asked about if this program was there. And they said, you know, I'm not part of that program, but I know someone who might be able to help you. And they gave me another person's phone number. And I called her, and she says, no, call this other person. And you need to call her in the next hour because she goes to bed early. And so I called her, and she was starting a meeting. This was Modesto, California, the day they wanted me to start my new job. And I quickly said, oh, I guess I'm supposed to go to Modesto, California. And what I experienced was a shift from being someone who showed up at meetings and just received to someone who had to give service in order to have recovery. Because it was down to us. If I was going to have recovery, I had to sponsor people. I had to step up and do these things. And a fellowship grew. There was that one meeting, and it was about an hour's drive to get to that meeting from where I lived and worked. But it was like my recovery depended on it. I was going to do it. I was going to go, and I did. And we did grow a fellowship, and I learned through my experiences of making every kind of mistake you can in program. You know what I mean? We get an opportunity to learn to do things differently, and yet a fellowship grew. And under that program, those meetings are still going on in Modesto, California today. But my life journey took me to Kansas City. And when I moved to Kansas City, the program the meetings did not look like the how that I knew in the Modesto, California program. And I was talking to someone about that. And she said, you need to call this person. And she gave me this person's number, and I called that person. And she said, I'll sponsor you, but only if you start a meeting in Kansas City. And so I started a meeting in Kansas City. Now, that meeting in Modesto, California, that first meeting there, there were about 12 or 14 people there. And it was because the gal who started the meeting was going to another fellowship and showing up and saying, I'm working this program, but I'm coming to your fellowship. And people who needed the kind of recovery she had came over to this new meeting. And when I was in Kansas City, years before, I had been going back there for classes before I moved there. And I met this one gal and there was a little meeting. There was two people there attending that meeting regularly. This was back, you know, in the 90s. And I had kept her phone number on my cell phone. And So when I was getting ready to start this meeting, I gave her a call. And I said, hey, I'm going to do this thing. And she showed up. And other people, because she had been trying to work a solid program in another fellowship, other people showed up from that. And they, we created a group. And we, and then, you know, she started another meeting, and another person started another meeting, and we had three meetings. And it was wonderful. It was just like it says in the big book. That's what it was like for me. And and when Suzanne asked me to be on this panel, and I was wondering if this was what I was really supposed to do, I was remembering what it says in the big book about in working with others. I think it's the second paragraph of working with others. It said, you will see a fellowship grow up around you. This is an experience you do not want to miss. And that captures it really, really well for me. I'm very grateful for PhoneBridge when I'm not able to make my three face-to-face meetings in Sacramento where I now live again. That's why I know Suzanne so well. Because when no one shows up at the meeting that I have at my house, I get on the PhoneBridge meeting that's scheduled for the same time. And I do drive. I have one of the meetings I go to in Sacramento. I have to leave my house an hour and a half before the meeting starts to support that face-to-face meeting. But I know for myself, I need to have contact with people. I need to hug people. I need to see them successful, thank you, in their recovery. And I do it. And the other meeting, I have to leave my house 45 minutes ahead of time to get to that meeting on time. And sometimes if there's traffic problems, I'm a little late. But, you know, I show up. I do it because for me, it makes all the difference in the world to have that fellowship around me. And I've been mentored by people in this program who are meeting starters. You know, I don't know about you, but the kind of nurturing and care I've gotten and support I've gotten to grow up emotionally, to catch up with my chronological age, has been through, you know, the people who've nurtured me in this program. And they have said, this is what we do. This is what we do. And so wanting what they have, willing to do what they have done to get it, it's meant starting meetings. And I continue to be willing. I want to support other people in having the experience that I've had that's been so powerful for me. And this is, you know, one of the primary ways I know to do it. And one of those mentors who I stay in regular contact with, she when I moved to Kansas City, she had us connect with an intergroup, first the Southern California intergroup, and then an intergroup that was in the Midwest. And my circle of friends expanded, and it was Area 3. And so we were affiliated with people in Chicago and affiliated with people in Michigan. And, you know, and last night hearing our speaker and knowing that, you know, I was going to those early retreats that the Michiana intergroup had, and that fellowship is continuing to grow. It's just those kinds of connections that we make just by being with other people in recovery are one of the most powerful things I know. And just as a practical matter, how to start a meeting, go to ceahow.org. And in the left-hand column under meetings and intergroups, the second bullet point says meeting assistance and how to start a meeting. Click on how to start a meeting, and you will find the list of things that you get to agree to register a meeting with CEA Howe. And the commitments you make is that you meet to practice the 12 steps and 12 traditions of CEA HAL. All who have a desire to stop the symptoms of food addiction are welcome in the meeting and group. A meeting or group may be formed by two or more persons meeting together to abstain from food addiction. The person registering the meeting must have 30 days of CEHAL abstinence, be a qualified food sponsor, and be working with his or her own CEHAL sponsor. As a meeting or group, we have no affiliation other than CEHAL. This means that we do not pitch about 12-step programs other than CEA HAL. To promote recovery from compulsive eating, CEHAL meetings employ a 30-day CEHAL abstinence requirement to share at a meeting, or 7 days if a person has discussed their sharing with their CEHAL sponsor. And to be considered a CEHAL meeting, the meeting must meet the following requirements. The reading of the 12 steps of CEHAL, the 12 traditions of CEHAL, the CEHAL concept, and 7 tools. These are to be read as written. The leader must have a minimum of 30 days of CEHAL abstinence, adherence to abstinence requirements to pitch per the 7 tools. And only CEHAL or AA conference approved literature is used at the meetings. Outside literature is not read or quoted. And so I just say from my heart, if your group meets these requirements, please complete the online form and have the experience of seeing a fellowship grow up about you. This is an experience you do not want to miss. Bless you, friends.
Thanks, Margie and Adele and Suzanne. Great to be here. Thanks, everybody, for coming. I am a compulsive eater. My name is Loretta.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi. I currently reside in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, which is right outside of Cleveland, although I've moved around myself. And when I got to, actually I knew this because I used to go back and forth when I lived in Long Beach, California, to Cleveland because my mom was there and in Cleveland. And I looked up meetings and I would call these people and they'd say, "We're not in that group anymore. I don't know why they still have our names on the World Service List. You know, don't call us anymore." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Is there anybody in this city that still practices CEHAL program?" "I don't know. We don't go to that meeting. We go to these 12-step fellowships over here." So I knew that there wasn't, that there had been, but there wasn't anymore. And I didn't know I was going to be moving there. So when I lived in Long Beach, of course, there were meetings everywhere. And I still couldn't get to them. I relied on the phone bridge a lot because of physical reasons. And very, very, very grateful for the phone bridge. Although when I could get to a regular face-to-face meeting, it was a super treat for me, really was, because I agree, the hugs and the personal contact and people don't look like what you think they look like on the phone and, you know, it's just all that good stuff. So when I moved to Ohio 6.5 years ago, I had one friend in particular that kept saying, "Why don't you start a meeting there? When are you going to start a meeting? You have any face-to-face meetings? When are you going to start a meeting?" For like 5 years, she kept that up. And I just said, you know, I'll do it when the time is right. I just did not feel that I had the energy and the strength to do it. And then finally one day, I don't know what happened, but I said, you know, I think it's time to start a face-to-face meeting here. So I tried my church, and my church said no. They were too busy with church business to, you know, have a 12-step food fellowship there. They had had another one there, and they had had that fellowship had to move. So I found a place, was the church where I go to another 12-step group, and they were very accommodating, and she didn't even know what to charge me. She goes, "Oh, how about $10? I said, $10 a month. I said, "We can do that." So I had some people from the Phone Ridge that lived in Cleveland area that were very excited, and they said, "Oh, we'll be there, and I'm going to bring people with me," and you know, and it was wonderful. I was really looking forward to it. We had about 5 or 6 people the first couple of meetings, yeah, and then it dwindled. And I had the one person who was real excited say to me, "Well, can't you have it on a Thursday night?" And I thought, you know, I've done this before. I used to belong to our sister fellowship, and I started meetings in my little town in Idaho. And people would say, "Well, I want it on this night. Well, I want it at this time." And then they would never show up. So I stuck to Friday night at 5:30 because it was still early enough for me. And I thought if people getting off work could come to it. And nobody had to go to work the next, most people don't have to go to work the next day. So it was a good night that I thought. And I've tried three times to get our ads in the paper. And I keep getting these directions that when I try to follow them, they don't work on the internet. Because they said, well, you have to do this ad digitally. So I tried that, and it just didn't work. So I still have to do that. I don't have any ads in the paper yet. I posted our folders on Are You a Compulsive Eater? Do you think you have a problem with eating at the library? And I have given countless numbers of people who asked me about the program, the literature. I even have had caregivers. Most of my caregivers, for some reason, seem to have food problems. I don't know if it's the business or if it's me that they're being attracted to, but I've shared with most of them because most of them help me to make my food. They're like, "Why do you do this?" And I said, "Well, you know, it depends. It depends what I say to them. If I feel moved to, I tell them I'm in a 12-step food fellowship, and this is what I do to maintain my health." Because it got really bad for me when I didn't do this. And so they get interested, and so I've given some of them a pamphlet, I've given them the phone numbers. One of them was going to Phonebridge for a while, but then I think she stopped. So we do have our little Friday night meeting. It lasts for an hour, and I've gotten a free conference call line. So at the same time that our meeting is going on face-to-face, we can have people call in on a free conference call. And I was doing the same thing. I was having people from the Phonebridge and other areas call in and be my speakers. So we would have them speak for 15 to 20 minutes and then give us a topic, and then everyone could share, and other people could participate that would call in on the free conference call line. So we had a live meeting and a free conference call line meeting going on at the same time. So that was very helpful. Not this Friday night, but 10 days ago, I was the only one at my meeting, and it was hard. You know, I only do the meeting on the first and the third Fridays of the month because until I can find somebody else to take the second and the fourth, that's all the energy I've got. So I said, well, that's what I do. And I've had people criticize me for it, like, you know, you really should have that meeting four nights a week. And I said, would you like to come out here and lead it? And that shuts them up, you know. But if they do, I would love to have that meeting four nights a week. I have put flyers into the church that we're at, and I have told everybody there they have one. The bookkeeper there is a very, very, very large woman. She's getting larger all the time. And her name is also Loretta. And I like her. She's a very nice lady. And right in front of her, I asked the secretary of the church, can we put these flyers in your church? Would that be okay? And she said she knows the meeting's there. She never shows any interest in it. And it's really hard for me not to say, and you, Loretta, should really come to our meetings. So I don't do that. She knows they're there, and I figure if she shows up one day, she shows up one day. So we've had that meeting going since December 4th. I announced it on the Phonebridge a lot. And I give flyers to whoever I can. There's a number of people in my other 12-step fellowship that have food problems and food issues. And I have shared in my share at that meeting that I came in through the back doors of another food fellowship to that 12-step group. And people go, oh, do you belong to this food program? I go, no, I belong to such and such. We've never heard of that. Excuse me. So I just I tell them, well, we work the steps. We use AA literature. We work these seven tools. We have requirements. And one gal sat in there, and her eyes got wider and wider and wider as I read the requirements, and she has not come back. She told me, she said, I just don't like people telling me what to do. And I said, okay. And then she'll ask me after every meeting of our other fellowship, she'll say, you still having that meeting going on? I said, yep. And that's all I say. You know, I don't call her because she doesn't seem to want to be there right now. She said, well, I'm going to try this other food fellowship. I said, great, go ahead. So I've gotten a lot of experience, strength, and hope from these ladies who have shared so far, and I've written down some great ideas. I've put my cell phone number on the back of the brochures. I don't put my name either, but I do put my number, in case you're interested, for a local number. And so that's where we're at. And I had decided all on my own to do this for a year, and I'm so pleased to hear that that was the recommendation, because I didn't know that. And they sent me a new meeting packet, and So I followed most of those recommendations, but I didn't realize that was in there. And I have also called World Service going, help, what do I do if, you know, and Pamela has just been wonderful. She gets back to me either with an email or a phone call. Very, very wonderful resource. And so that's where I stand. There is a meeting in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, if anybody's coming to that area. I am part of, I'd like to be reminded that I'm part of Intergroup Area 3 also. And yes, that has also expanded my fellowship. It's very, very nice. And in fact, I had one woman who was here from Area 3 go, were you on our last intergroup meeting? And I said, yes. And she said, now I know you. Because I had been at a retreat with her, and that's how I met Margie many years ago in Technion, Illinois. Yeah. So I went out to that retreat and met a number of people from Area 3. And that was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience for me. I don't go to too many of them just because it's hard to travel. So that's what I have to share. I do have more than 30 days of abstinence, and I felt like I had something to give. So that's why I started a meeting. And, you know, like I said, I'll do it for a year, and then I'll reevaluate. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Yes. Adele would like to say something else, and that's fine. There you go.
Adele, compulsive overeater, bulimic. And one of the persons that started a meeting in our town, the town that I moved from, just walked in. So Liz started two meetings in the town, but one closed, but still one going on. So let's give a pause to her or anybody else that started a meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank Adele and Margie and Loretta for wonderful shares. And I'm Suzanne, I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I have not opened a CAHEL meeting, but I have opened another meeting in another food fellowship in another country. But what I'd like to just, you know, remind everybody, it takes one person. If you have another fellow, two is better, but if you're by yourself, you can do it. There have been members that, on their own, you know, that have done it, one person. And yes. You have to have a little talk with yourself and your sponsor. Are you willing to make that commitment for a year? Are you willing to be by yourself sometimes? That's okay. You know, maybe it's not okay, but is it okay? The website does have a lot of information. And then I have gotten calls from people in Utah about their meetings. And I said, well, there is public information. There is a public service announcement that's already recorded on the website. I believe it's still there, or in text form. Please talk to World Service Office about that one. But that is a big resource. Radio stations have free public service announcements, so you could announce it on the radio. There's a wonderful workshop on the website. Public Information Committee did on spreading the word about CAHEL and all the wonderful resources. If you're looking, if you're thinking of a real face-to-face meeting, one of the things that was recommended was if you don't have any idea where to have it, go to a place where there's already 12-step meetings. That's a wonderful place to start. Is it easy to find? Is it easy to access? Do they have some parking? Those could be questions. I have a friend that's opening a meeting in San Francisco in August, and she came to this convention last year, and she said, I'm going to open a meeting in a year. So it's going to be a little tiny bit more than a year, but not quite. She is doing it. And that was one of the things she looked for. Is it easy to get to? Is there some parking? And in San Francisco, that's a big deal, as in big cities. I used to go to a wonderful face-to-face meeting. It had parking, and it was easy to get to. But it was very hard to find the room. It was in a basement, and it was kind of like a maze down there. And for a long time, it functioned well, but then we closed it. That's another story. But all that's important. And you can also, where do you publicize, for the lack of a better word? A lot of community bulletin boards, at supermarkets, hospitals, any place there's a community-built bulletin board. I used to put one in the community bulletin board in my building where I lived because it was close to a couple of my face-to-face meetings. I've also given pamphlets to my doctor's office. So there are lots of different things, and I would listen to some of the workshops that have already been recorded to get ideas. And I think all of us are probably, is that a yes? We're all available if someone wants to call us or email us if you want more information or talk to us, you know, here. But the other thing I wanted to go over a little bit is I hear some people say, yeah, I had a face-to-face meeting, but I don't like to go to it because they're breaking a lot of traditions and I can't go there. So a little experience with that. If your face-to-face meeting is kind of not really adhering to the traditions, I have learned the hard way. You know, sometimes if you bring it up at a business meeting, some people can get resentful, and you have to be at a certain emotional place to really speak up in a loving way. And if that doesn't work, you know, I've learned also to speak to the secretary alone and saying, you know, you are you aware of the traditions and, you know, whatever. Sometimes that goes well and sometimes it doesn't. So then you talk to members individually about what is going on in the meeting. There have been meetings that had voted no abstinence. And one of my sponsees really had a big problem with this. She said she read the tools. The tool, this one says, we have to have 30 days. And so, you know, all these things come up in group conscience. And sometimes meetings, they have the right to be wrong, you know. However, a few meetings I can think of when they have done that, big, strong meetings sometimes have folded over that. So it's really important to go on the website and look at guidelines, look at the requirements, and to know. And for our fellowship, there are people that come into our fellowship wanting to impose guidelines and requirements from other fellowships, and vice versa, I have to say. So please go to the website and study, or your own inner group. You know, the inner groups are supposed to be, and they are a wonderful resource of information and suggestions. But if you have one of those meetings, you know, take a meeting inventory. If your meeting hasn't had a business meeting in a very long time, call for a business meeting. Rotation of service. On the phone bridge, sometimes that's harder just because it's easier not to take a service position. But in face-to-face meetings, you're standing there, you're sitting there with other people. Sometimes I think it's easier. So call for a business meeting and call for rotation of service. One meeting that I'm thinking of is very large. It's not anymore. The same three people run the meeting. Same person, same two people are doing literature for years. They won't give it up. Same person is head of the steering committee. And all that's not, you know, God bless them, they're doing service. But it has led to some people leaving that meeting. And so, you know, please be considerate of that. Bring it up in a very loving way. Your voice could make the change in that meeting. I have told some of my sponsees, go back to that meeting, and you be, if nothing else, you be that quiet, loving example, if nothing else. Please try not to be angry and pout and just go and be loving about it, but be a good, strong example of what service or working this program is about. I hope all that is helpful. I'm going to open it now to... And like I said, please go to the website or call any one of us. The World Service Office is really helpful. Don't hesitate to call. And there is no dumb question, by the way. I used to think I had a lot of dumb questions, but there aren't. So don't be fearful. And I always say this, if I can lead a meeting, anybody can. or anybody can lead a meeting better than I can, too. So, and with that, I'm going to open up to questions, or if anybody else has had an experience opening a face-to-face meeting they'd like to share, please come up to the microphone and sign into the sheet, or if anybody has a question. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Linda M., and I'm from Compulsive Eater from San Jose, California.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Oh, thank you so much for doing this. This convention has really reinforced that I have got to start a meeting. A face-to-face. Thank you. You know, I've been in this program a year. I have 177 days of back-to-back abstinence. Sure. Pass it over to Suzanne. Or do you
want to? Good morning. My name is Betty.
Hi, Betty.
I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm from Missouri. Lest you have any doubt, I want to share my story with you only because it really supports what opening a new meeting can mean in a human being's life. My life has exponentially changed since 2008 when I first came to my first CHOW meeting and walked through the doors and wasn't sure why I was really there, but wanted to know and get another diet. And I, through a series of slips and sponsors, ended up never leaving. I have a recommitted abstinence of 12, 21, 11. And I want to say this, that because this panel, who I was privileged really to serve with this year as a first-time delegate, I want to personally honor and thank Margie because of the fact that she did open a meeting in Kansas City. I wouldn't be in the service position I'm in today had it not been for that meeting being opened. I wouldn't have maintained and lost 32 pounds had that meeting not been opened. I wouldn't have the recovery of sanity, spirituality, and health that I have today had that meeting not opened. And I've served at her encouragement as intergroup secretary, as now a delegate, because she said, you know, have you ever considered serving at that level? I've chaired the meetings. I've done a lot of service positions. We opened an area intergroup in Kansas City a year and a half ago. And because of lack of attendance, I hate to tell you that those meetings have temporarily been closed. And I say temporarily because I'm not leaving Area 3. I'm not walking away from this program just because there aren't local face-to-face meetings. And as my life changes, I will no doubt, along with one other person I sponsor in that area, also open or reopen another meeting because it changed my life. It gave me the life I have. And I just am humbled beyond words and cannot say thank you enough to this fellowship. And in particular, Margie, thank you.
Hi, I'm Jerry, compulsive eater.
Hi, Jerry.
From Seattle, Washington. And wow, I've really gotten a lot out of this workshop. Thank you very much. I just want to share, I started my recovery in Southern California with so many wonderful meetings. And then 4 months later, I found myself moving to the Pacific Northwest, to Seattle. And just a brief history, the meetings that were there back in 2008 all folded up in April of that year. And I got there the end of July that year. So it was really interesting. And one of the members that I did get in contact with advised me that those meetings folded due to the simple fact of gossip, which really was shocking to me. But in saying that, a meeting did get started about 4 or 5 years ago with several other members in the outlying areas. And so we've had a meeting going on again, off again.
Anybody else who would like to ask a question or share their experience?
Hi, this is Adele, compulsive overeater, bulimic. It's one of the girls that I sponsor right now. She went to that program and she told the person that whose house it was at, she said, you know, it's not working for me, you know, and she gave her my number. And so now she come to our program and she had abstinence ever since October of last year. So
that happened. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Adele. Anyone else who'd like to share or ask a question?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
I'm definitely a compulsive eater, and I'm definitely an extremely grateful member of this fellowship. I cannot tell you how many years it took me to get here. I knew about CA HOW for years, and people who knew me well said, don't go near them. They're too strict. They're like terrible. It's just the most god-awful, you know, and I believed them. for all those years. It took me a long time to get to see how. So I'm just so grateful to be here. I have for 2.5 years been maintaining a meeting, making sure the doors are open in San Pedro, California. Thank you. Thank you. We've had as little as 2, and now we're up to about 6. So yay. I'm like, yeah. So inspired by Margie, who I had a contact with for a while, and just listening to someone have the joy of giving back is just such a privilege, and I just feel so lucky that I know where I knew we were going to meet here for the first time. This is my first convention, and it's like in 5.5 years of abstinence, because I'm always gone in the summer. I'm gone to Europe in the summer for, I know, six to eight weeks, but that's because I'm first generation Italian, and so I have a whole... Let me tell you, and I promise I won't make this totally a share, because I do have a question, an important question. I maintain my abstinence in Italy, and my relatives feel I have lost my mind. And I even had one relative even take a forkful of something and try to put it in my mouth. So when I told her that I would probably never come to her house again if she tried to ever do that again. this is my life. See how is my life. It's not impossible. It is not a don't go near us, we're just too strict. It is a way of life that has given me such a life. I just, not to mention my relationships and working those steps in without the fog of extra food, all the extra food. Anyway, but my question is, because I still have to work my steps on this, is the interference of phone bridge meetings in our face-to-face meetings in Los Angeles. We have a Tuesday night meeting that is at a hospital, for goodness sakes. It's at a recovery center in a hospital. And we have a lovely man who has a phone bridge meeting about at the same time. And I'm like saying, if you didn't have that phone bridge meeting, maybe our meeting would be flourishing, I love phone bridge. Don't get me wrong. I do one phone bridge meeting no matter what a week. But it's in Los Angeles, our meetings are suffering terribly because people, I'm not saying the easier, softer way. I'm not going to say that. That's what I'm thinking. But I'm not going to say the easier, softer way is the phone bridge meeting. You don't have to get out. You can be in your pajamas, whatever. Anyway, Margie said it. I have to have hugs. I have to see people. I have to say, this is what I'm present for this hour, hour and a half. Because this is so important. I was saying with the wonderful, I've gotten so much from those I sponsor, One of the things is they said is get 2 meetings that are at the same time, 2 face-to-face meetings, and get together by phone. Now that's, actually have a face-to-face meeting with another, like in Porterville or in Santa Monica. So that's one thing. But is there any way that that there's a future in CHOW to sort of limit the onslaught of a phone bridge?
Oh, boy. Okay.
I know it's an issue, but...
Yeah, that would be pretty hard because... I'm Suzanne, grateful compulsive eater. Because the phone bridge is a different intergroup, a different area. And instead of seeing it as the, it's taking away from me, get on that meeting before it starts and after it ends and say and invite people to your face-to-face meeting. Use the phone bridge to promote your face-to-face meeting. I didn't know it was there. Let me know where it is at. I'll go to San Pedro. I'll go to your meeting. Yeah. But use the phone bridge. And that's my other thing I was going to say. If you're traveling, get the phone bridge outreach list. Travel to people and, there's someone in North Carolina. Call them. Meet them for coffee. That will encourage them to open a face-to-face meeting, hopefully. So use the foam rich as a tool, not as it's taking away from. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, I do. But go to the meeting before it starts and after it finishes during fellowship and ask people to come to your meeting. Call people from that meeting and say, hey, come to my meeting. I'd love to if you'd be there. I need your support. I need you. We need you. But I don't see there's any way of doing it. Like I said, it's a different intergroup, different. It's like, can you imagine the Fulham Bridge is all over the place, and there are meetings everywhere. If everybody said you can't have a meeting at 6 o'clock because there would be no Fulham Bridge. So you have to kind of take that in consideration. I hope I answered that. Anyone else with a question?
Thank you.
One more?
Hi, I'm Lindy. I'm an addict, food addict, compulsive eater, addictive in other things too. I wanted to make a comment, one, piggyback on what you shared, Suzanne. I stood up at a meeting one time when they were telling people what to do, how to do it, and I, the woman that ran the meeting for a long time used to be just a stickler about this, and I thought, God, she's such a killjoy. And then I realized why she was doing it. It maintained the integrity and the structure of that meeting and the overall purpose of the entire fellowship. And so one day when these two women were going at it and giving this woman all this advice, I said, you know, I need to tell you that that is breaking a tradition, and you can do it all you want after the meeting and share. But in the meeting, we need to keep it clean. And the next week, like three people showed up. So when you stand up for what's right in this structure, be prepared. You know, things could roll the other way. The other thing, too, is a piggyback on what you shared. When you're on a phone bridge meeting, you can share your own feelings. And my own feelings and experiences, I need to press the flesh. I need to touch people. I need to look in their eyes. I need to see the love that's invisible in the room. And there is this invisible energy that is so beautiful when we're all together that it's just not there in a phone bridge. It's there, but it's in a different form. That's all. And the other piggyback with the food, you know, trying to almost shove it in your mouth, you know, you just simply... If I can stay loving throughout that and say, if I had a rare disease, would you force something on me that would give me an allergic reaction? And then they can start to understand. But they don't understand. What the hell's wrong with you? You can't do this and this and this. Oh, come on. You can have some. How many of you have heard that 1,000 times? Oh, you can have a little bit. A little bit's not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it will. Yeah, it will. Anyway, thank you for your service and your love and your commitment and for being here.
Thank you, Lindy. I would just... two quickie stories. There was a member that opened a meeting in the UK and sat there by herself for many months. The first person that walked in was someone from the United States who had never been to a face-to-face meeting. That was her first meeting, live face-to-face meeting. And this was the other person's first, you know, person in the meeting. But she was persistent, and so that's really a miracle. And the other thing is, I was talking to a member from Australia who had 48 days. I think she's going to the Michiana retreat with her husband. She's planning to come to the States at least once a year, maybe twice, to get fellowship. She's also seriously considering starting a meeting with another member from her former fellowship that's interested in CA Howe. So the phone bridge is a tool. It really is. Because I speak to people all over the world. You know, I speak to people in Russia and Israel and Australia, New Zealand, France, the UK, Kenya, I'm trying to think where else, Holland. So it is a tool. And we can use that to spread the word, encourage people. If you've never done phone bridge in your life and you're like holding your nose, get on there and encourage people about the wonders of face-to-face meetings. You know, we are responsible. You know, the theme of the convention is the promises, but we are responsible. We have to work it. We got to take action. Please get on the phone bridge and share the miracles of face-to-face meetings and the energy and the hugs. And like I said, if you travel, get the Flame Bridge outreach list and look for other members and at least have coffee with them, fellowship. That is, I remember one, someone called me and she said, someone traveled all the way from Alaska to be with this person. They were going on business and they had a mini meeting. She had never had a meeting before. So please do that. I'd like to thank everybody. And there's any one burning desire left? We have time for a quickie.
You have one standing.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Karen N., compulsive eater, food addict.
Hi, Karen.
And hi, and thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I was looking forward to this panel, and because I came from face-to-face meetings. I started in Lancaster, California on a Tuesday night. There were like 25, 28 people, and it totally changed my life. I mean, I never knew I was a compulsive eater until I heard all these people talk and tell my story and did the crazy things with food that I did with food. And, you know, it was just a miracle. I lost 70 pounds. And I've maintained that up to about, you know, at least no more than 20 over the last 21 years. And I moved from Southern California to Northern California. And in Northern California, there were no face-to-face meetings. And I'm talking from San Jose to where I live, Santa Rosa, 60 miles. I mean, that whole Bay Area. We have one face-to-face meeting that we started once a month on Sunday, first Sunday of the month. Six people come to that meeting, maybe, if everybody shows up. And that's somebody from San Jose, from Hayward, from Oakland, from Santa Rosa, from Nevada, anyway. So, and we all, most of the time we talk about how can we get a face-to-face meeting because we're all on phone bridge. And we love, if you have no other meeting, phone bridge is where it's at. And so a phone bridge is a miracle in my life today because it helps me stay connected to the program. However, I know the power of face-to-face meetings, and I want to start one, and that is the reason I'm here. And I'm so glad that you addressed the need for us to work together. And I hadn't even thought, oh, my God, have one when there is have a face-to-face meeting when there is a phone bridge meeting, because at least there would be me and the phone bridge if nobody shows up, and if they do show up, then we have a meeting. And I love the response about, you know, okay, well, I can just say if on the phone bridge, if there's anybody living in, you know, from Santa Rosa to Marin or to Ukiah, please come to our meeting. It would be wonderful. But, you know, I don't see that. I bet you if the person from, said San Pedro to Long Beach or whatever, I don't know exactly configuration there, but I bet you nobody is really not coming to their meeting because they're on the phone bridge. It's for all of us from, you know, all over the country and all over the world that are going to phone bridge meetings. And I see us as partners. I mean, we're CHOW. So I guess I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. I just want one last comment. The phone bridge is in the process of revamping their phone list to look for areas of people to encourage them to, at the very least, fellowship and hopefully start meetings. But there is a meeting coming to San Francisco, I believe, August 8th. So I would like to thank everybody. I'd like to thank Adele, Margie, and Loretta, and everybody who shared, everybody who was here listening. Thank you for allowing us to be here, and we want to close with a serenity prayer.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I will not mind.
Keep coming back. It works, and you'll work it. You'll work it because you're worth it. Yeah.